good?
He's hitting the head, I think.
So are you thinking on next month, or are you
going to...
Good evening, and welcome to the October 16th, 2019 regular meeting of the Morro Bay Public Works Advisory Board. We do have a quorum this evening. John Irwin is not available, but the other members of the board are here. And as an announcement, I would like to mention that we do have one vacancy on the board, and that the City Council has put out a notice indicating that they are taking applications for the position. So if you're interested in being a member of the Public Works Advisory Board, I would encourage you to go down to City Hall and put in an application. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak on items not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll close public comment period. There are no items under the consent agenda calendar, so we'll move straight to the business items. B1 is the director's report. I'll pass that on to Rob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. As you can see, we've had another busy month with a little bit of paving and trees. Had some issues with the Coleman Park public restroom, and we've been able to open back up the Monty Young restroom. Been busy with utilities, with repairing leaks and maintenance on the desal facility. Doing our standard maintenance at the wastewater treatment plant, including pump replacement and working on flash mixers and the chlorine analyzer. Capital projects, I want to highlight the pavement management. We've gone out with an RFP for the streets reassessment, so that is out on the streets right now. We've been contacted by three engineering firms that are interested in that work, so it's been out for a day, so expect more. We're working on getting RFPs out for the water system and collection system improvements. North Point parking lot improvements. Going to go out for quotes probably next week on the lighting and fencing improvements there. It's not a large enough project to go through the informal bid process. The boat rinse-off station, Pocket Park, our bids that we received were well beyond what the grant will cover and our engineer's estimate, so we're reassessing the project and may perform some of the work in-house. I think we can find an easy divider in doing some of the demo and more civil-related work, and then have a put the rest out for more of a landscape contract and hopefully have better prices on that. On the bocce ball greenhouse at Shaspin Dunes, that project, that was out for a few weeks and no bids were received on that project. What we heard from when we contacted a couple of the companies that we'd tried to encourage to bid is our engineer's estimate was too low. And so we're looking at that project. Council will be reviewing the Cloisters concept landscape plan, and we're looking for them to approve that on their consent agenda on next Tuesday. I'm still working on quite a few development review projects, and continuing to move forward on the wastewater project. With that, we can answer any specific questions you might have.
Okay. We'll start with you, Tori. Do you have any questions on the director's report? And if they're on a specific page, would you indicate which page you're
Well, I just want to follow up on the last item you spoke about in terms of the small capital improvement projects on page 12 and the bidding. Do you think it's a tight market or something that some of these bids are coming in higher than has there been inflation?
I think there's a lot of work out there right now for in these civil type projects, and so we're when there's a lot of work, you receive typically will receive higher bids.
Yeah. Yeah.
We only received one bid from a San Luis Obispo contractor. All the rest were from the valley. So. And that San Luis Obispo contractor's bid was about three times more than the engineer's estimate, so he was about $137,000.
This is for the rinse-off?
Yeah, yeah, for that small,
little park,
park area that we had reviewed a few meetings ago.
Yeah. And how do you put out bids? Do you have a list of contractors?
We have a list of contractors that have asked to receive projects. And then we know which contractors do that type of work, so we'll send it to them.
Yeah.
So there's kind of three levels of under the public contracts code for bidding. Projects that are under $45,000 are require us to get at least three quotes on those projects. So typically we'll try for at least three quotes on those, usually more. Projects between $45,000 and $125,000, we do the informal bid process. So we'll advertise that on our website, in the paper, and then send copies to plan houses. And so it's a public bid opening for those. Projects that are above $125,000 are what is called a formal bid process. And those go through the same advertising as the informal, except those are awarded by City Council. The two lower levels the contract can be signed by authorization of the city manager.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
Okay, let's go down to Chris. Christopher, do you have anything?
I just had a couple small questions. We did the fats, oils, and grease inspections. We've seen that before. Does that have to be, in conjunction with the health department at all? Or is that really just our part on the control into the sewer?
Yeah, no, that's just our own staff actually conducting those inspections. And yes, it's a continuous listing on there, and I just kind of list how many we actually completed. We do every business holder that has a grease interceptor or even if they don't, if they have the ability to contribute to greases and add into the system, we inspect them at a minimum once a year.
And then I just had one, I'll call it housekeeping issue, right? So over the last month or so, we've seen some emails come in, in particular, Mrs. Linda Merrill, and obviously it's about the restrooms, in the community. And, I don't know if someone steps in from the city that reads those and just lets her know that maybe it's possible she's sending the emails to the wrong people, or to maybe get on the app or the website, or if there's another formal way, or if that concerned citizen just gets ignored. And I don't know, it's prayed that they don't respond again or what, because I think there was four or five that came in, and so I didn't know where city administration steps in, or if you're looking to, hey, does the board member reply, do we all ignore it, or where do those type of things, just in the protocol and where that goes.
So We have responded multiple times to Ms. Merrill regarding what we can and can't do as far as maintaining restrooms. We have, it's mainly on the weekends and quite frequently very busy weekends where they may not be left in pristine condition by the users of those restrooms. So we have basically full-time staffing that goes up and down the Embarcadero cleaning those restrooms. I think she would like a higher level of service, and we have a certain budget that we have to deal with, and we're working to optimize that work effort as much as possible. One thing that we will be doing on the rock restrooms is, I know there was a lot of complaints about clogged toilets. Typically, they're not clogged. The user just either forgets or doesn't want to flush the toilet. Maybe they have a problem touching the flush operator, so we'll be putting in automatic flush toilets on the Embarcadero. We have added during the summertime an additional porta potty out at the Rock restroom. Unfortunately, the Coleman restroom does have some structural issues with it, and we'll be looking to likely, we're trying to come up with a plan to reuse what we can there and reconstruct that restroom. Probably knock down the walls to a few courses of block and then build a wood frame structure up on top of that. Yeah, go ahead.
So you had a multi-part question. One of the, I think, most important parts for me is that we have, you asked if the correct people are being contacted in these instances. We've been receiving those notifications on a Monday after they've been forwarded from council or the city manager back towards maintenance. All the restrooms have phone numbers posted on them and or a QR code reader. So the person that has a concern can directly access the service request module via the QR reader, or they can contact that phone number. We have staff on call 24/7, 365. So I can't say that there'll be a 15-minute response, but we do have somebody that will answer that phone and respond to the issue. Or they'll contact the person that's actually on working on the clock somewhere in the city to take care of that issue. So that's probably the best way. And I say that for the public in general, those who might be watching tonight, that contact that phone number, and they'll get the most immediate response. You can follow up with an email to city manager or council after that. But
anything else, Kristen?
No.
All right. And I'm sorry, I called you Christopher before. It's Christian. Go ahead, Steve.
Okay. I think I got my question answered a little earlier regarding the calcium chemical tanks for the water, potable water. I do have one in looking at this, and it's more my curiosity. I noticed that Rose's Landing is going to be a hotel now that's going to be going over the restaurant itself.
Yes, they're processing their applications to do that. I think they've tried a few restaurants up there to a variety of success levels. And
so it's kind of going to be like how the galley, I think the galley's set up.
I think
the
so,
food
yeah.
below. And the, okay, very good. Well, I hope it works for them. Thank you.
Okay, Jan?
Right now, they don't they have shops below?
On well, Rose's Landing. Has Rose's Landing, which has been there.
Oh, yeah, that one restaurant.
Since I've been here in 78.
Yeah.
It's one of the older places.
I forgot about that. I was thinking of just the boutique shops there. Yeah. Okay. A couple of questions. Like the tree that was removed at 695 Harbor, when you replace it, does it have to be replaced in the same place, or does a tree have to?
No, we're still assessing what the best spot to replace that is. It just needs to be replaced.
So will the stump eventually be taken out?
Will be taken out, and we'll either put concrete, fill that area in with concrete, or we'll grind it and put a tree back there.
So is that the same policy when people remove trees from their neighborhoods? They don't have to put a more appropriate tree back in the same place. They just have to put a tree somewhere else?
If typically we're the ones that will remove the trees.
Well, I know, but it goes through this. When they get a permit to remove a tree.
Yes, they're subject to replace that tree somewhere along their, typically somewhere along their frontage there. Or we have replaced some other spots in the city that would be a more appropriate spot for a tree. But yes, we try to get them replaced as close to that tree that was removed as possible.
Okay, thank you. Then the other thing was somebody asked me the other day about the debris along Quintana Road from the roundabout to South Bay Boulevard, that there's a lot of debris. And she says, does anybody pick that up? And so here's my question. Does anybody pick that up? Is that within the city limits? Is that the...
If it's on the, Quintana Road side of the fence, then it is city responsibility. And we have our maintenance crews that a few times a year that will police those areas there. And then a lot of debris, litter, ends up against the Main Street fence also, because mm-hmm. the wind blows from that direction and traps it up against the fence. So... few times a year we collect that litter along there.
On the freeway side of the fence, isn't there a sign up there that says that this is being picked up by a certain group on the freeway side of the fence?
And that I believe area? It's been adopted. I'm not sure if that... So with Caltrans, when you adopt a highway, you can either volunteer to do that work or you can just pay Caltrans and they do that work.
They work.
But you still get a sign.
Okay.
To adopt that road.
And so the one on Quintana side is, it works into the city system a couple
yes.
of times a year?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. It seems I may have had one or two questions. Let's see. On page 9 on the wastewater collections, let's see, early morning... Mainline hydro cleaning and video inspection flows, cleared the debris from the gravity mainline and identified the causes of the partial blockage. What were the causes?
Yeah, during routine cleaning there, we discovered some roots. So we went down and actually went in with a different type of tip and actually cut out a bunch of the roots.
Okay. And then on the next page, page 10, talked about the preparations for the planned PG&E outage for the nearby transformer replacement and the testing of emergency generators and automatic switch gears. That got me curious as to the warning sirens that are situated in town. How are those powered? Are those battery powered or are they powered on a electrical grid?
I have no idea how PG&E powers their warning sirens.
Okay, because if we ever do have a full power outage.
And an emergency.
And an emergency tsunami at the same time.
Okay. I'm sure they've thought of that, but we'll find out and get you an answer for next time on that.
All right. Okay, that's all the questions that I had. Did anyone else have any additional questions? Jan?
One more, since I'm the only, I think, the non-engineer on the thing. On page 9, you're talking about the capital improvement project, gravity main line replacement using trenchless technology, and then in parentheses, pipe bursting. So that means a pipe was there. There had been a trench with a pipe in it.
There was a pipe there, and when you burst that pipe, you basically have a kind of a cutter head that you pull through with a pipe behind it, so it breaks that pipe and you pull a new pipe into there.
And that's called trenchless because why?
You're that's one of the because
you're not digging a trench.
You're not having to dig a trench to replace that. Yeah, there's several techniques that you can use for trenchless technology. One is lining it with a pipe like that. You can blow in a liner. That gets cured with either hot water or steam to form up against the wall of the old pipe.
I was just curious, thinking trenchless, but you have a trench with a pipe. So.
And then there's when we
can fill in.
As you might remember, we talked a little bit about trenchless technology when we do the big project and bringing those multi-pipelines up Quintana to get through the roundabout area. We'll probably do micro-tunneling. So we'll dig a couple of pits, one about where the propane tank is at the U-Haul. There won't be a propane tank when we do it there, but and the other one will be behind in the street behind Morro Bay Coffee Company, and we'll start at one end and start tunneling with a tunneling machine over to the other side and pull pipes. The casing pipe will go in there, and then they'll install the actual conduits that convey the raw wastewater and then the treated wastewater. We'll probably have four pipes there.
I'm sorry. You're not putting the four pipes in one sleeve. You're doing four separate
I believe
sleeves.
It's one sleeve, a 72-inch casing.
Will you
there.
Ever be able to get it out? No, I just wonder because you got that many in one sleeve. It's interesting. So you're going to run a very large diameter conduit.
Yes.
Or, I mean, a sleeve.
Casing,
and
yeah.
Then, yeah, okay. Thank you.
John Irwin had a couple of questions that he emailed to us. One, we did a berm replacement on Conejo Court, and he wanted to know if there was a risk that a car could get hung up on that berm, and we typically replace them about the same height as they were before. So they're about a 6-inch high berm, the same as a curb there. So we don't expect people to be driving off of those berms very often. And we're hoping the car won't get hung up there. But typically, they can, you know, it's like a mountable curb. If you're driving slow enough, you should be able to. I'm not sure where they'd be going if they went over that berm in that location. But I don't think anybody gets hung up there. And then we have on page 5, have basically a shoulder failure out on Tuscan, and we're still investigating the cause of what's going on out there, whether it's there's moist water in the subgrade or I don't think it's an old landslide there. Maybe poor compaction, but that road's been there for an awful long time, and it really has just started showing up. So we'll investigate that. And then there was a question regarding could we get a school resource officer at San Jacinto, and I think he meant Greenwood intersection, and working with the chief to get some occasional enforcement out there. And then he had a question about some random emails that he's getting, and I don't have an answer to how we stop people from emailing us.
Okay. Rob, I had just one quick question, and it gets back to that conduit or the sleeve that you're going to put the four in. You're going to have to put the indirect potable reuse in a different trench, correct? I mean, doesn't state health standards make you have separation requirements?
Yes, unless we're using different materials of construction. So these will be jointless pipe.
Oh, okay.
So either HDPE or fused, fusible PVC.
Oh, okay. Is this on all of them or just strictly the IPR water?
I believe they're allowing both HDPE and fusible PVC.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I was looking at the lights flickering out here. on all the pipelines, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
so it'll be all, even the grab or the sewer.
Yes.
They are pressured.
Yeah.
That's true. So, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Tori, do you have any additional questions? sound like you did or no?
Well,
okay. Any other board members have a question? With that, then we'll move on to C, future agenda items. Do you have anything that you see forthcoming on our next agenda at this time?
I think we'll report on the results of the water audit. Isn't that we were looking to bring that to PWAB? We recently submitted our water loss audit, so we'll present that to the board.
Okay. With that, then I'll move for adjournment to the November 20th regular meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. Thank you, everyone, for attending.